Good morning to all of you. If you turn to the book of Ruth, be ready to start in just a moment. Your assignment was to read the book of Ruth. All of you are honorable and responsive people, so I'm sure that you have done that. A quick summary. We are in the time of the judges. What is the overarching character or quality of the time of the judges as far as spiritual matters are concerned? Since I don't hear an answer, I'd like you to go and read the last verse of Judges. Everybody did just as they saw fit. That's the context in which this is happening. How do you view the book of Ruth? You can view it as a love story. You can view it as the beginning of the process that leads people out of this time into something else, because you see the preparation for one of the kings, arguably the most important king. You also see the preparation for Jesus, because the people who are central to the story become part of the line that leads to Jesus' birth. We left last time in chapter 2, verse 13. But in order to get the context, I want to back up to verse 11. Ruth and Boaz have met in Boaz's field. She has come to glean, which is what poor people do. The law allows for those who have fields to harvest, that they're not allowed to harvest and reharvest and reharvest until they have everything. They make one pass, and whatever falls to the ground or whatever isn't picked up is left for the poor people to glean. The consequence of Ruth and Boaz meeting has Boaz say, verse 11, "I have been told about the way you have behaved to your mother-in-law since your husband's death, and how you left your own father and mother in the land where you were born to come to a people of whom you previously knew nothing. May the Lord repay you for what you have done, and may you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." I'd like you to remember that phrase. She then replied, "My Lord, I hope you will always look on me with favor." She began this section by asking him, "How is it that I have won your favor?" She is now saying, "I hope you will always look on me with favor. You have comforted me and you have encouraged me, though I am not even the equal of one of your workwomen." Now that's where we left off. You have read the story of Ruth, right? Well, most of you have. Most of you have. Where does the story go from here? It goes immediately into something that is breaking social convention, left and right. What happens? She is fed by Boaz at lunchtime. Did you read that? "When it was time to eat, Boaz said to her, 'Come and eat some of this bread and dip your piece in the vinegar.' Ruth sat down beside the reapers, and Boaz essentially served her." He served her a meal that was so sumptuous and so generous that she had some left over. And later in the story, what does she do with that leftover food? She offers it to Naomi, her mother-in-law. Okay. "She ate until her hunger was satisfied," the tail end of verse 14 says, "and she had some left over," and that's what she did with what was left over. Verse 15, "When she had gotten up to glean some more, Boaz gave orders to his work people." Why does it say work people? Because some were women and some were men. Gave orders to his work people. What were his orders? Deliberately drop some in her path. And make sure she gleans as close to the harvest as she wants. That's what that last part means. "And do not scold her." What has he offered her so far? He has certainly offered her protection. Can you find another P word?
Provision.
I tried to think of four more because there seems like there's more going on here, but that's as far as I got. I think there's more. I just don't know how to say it with words that start with P. Mm-hmm. Maybe. There are mornings that I have pre-breakfast. Barbara doesn't think that's a good idea. Or pre-lunch. So she gleaned in the field until evening. She then beat out what she had gleaned, and it came to about a bushel of barley. How big is a bushel compared to a peck? Is it bigger or is it smaller? Is there two pecks to a bushel or four bushels to a peck? Is a bushel a lot or a little? It's a lot. When it says she beat out what she had gleaned, what does that mean? She separated what was edible from what was not edible. Or at least so I interpret it. Is that the way you interpret it? What's a word for that? Threshing. Oh, there's a great word to think about. On a small scale, she threshes what she's had. Okay? Winnowing, I think, is another word that's sometimes used for that. Because what happens is you get a breeze going, you toss the stuff up in the air, the stuff you don't want to eat is lighter and blows away in the... What's our word for what blows away?
Chaff.
It seems to me that if you go through the Bible, you see this kind of thing, this image from agriculture used all over the place to talk about God's process of working with people. Sometimes it talks about within a person to concentrate what is good and to remove what isn't good. And sometimes it talks about separating, isolating good people from bad people. The image is one that is interesting. Taking it with her, she went back to town. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. Ruth also took out what she had kept after eating all she wants. That's the part that was left over. And gave that to her. And her mother-in-law had a question. What was her question? Where have you been? Now, don't say it the way I heard some of you say it. This has got to come out with some passion and some fervor. Where have you been? And what's hiding behind the question? To have gotten all of this.
Yeah.
When you glean, the pickings are usually slim. And her pickings were not slim. There's a place in the Bible where it says, tossed to the top and overflowing. You know, there's an image like that. Where have you been gleaning today? Where have you been working? Blessed is the man who took notice of you. Because it was pretty clear somebody had taken notice of her, she wouldn't have come home with this much if she hadn't. Ruth told her mother-in-law in whose field she had been working, "The name of the man with whom I've been working today," she said, "is," you can hear a pregnant pause, and I use that word advisedly, "Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, and I think you should hear some excitement in her voice at this point, "May he be blessed by the Lord who does not withhold his faithful love from the living or the dead. This man," Naomi added, "is," and it's very important that I hear what word you have right here. Mine says, "a close relative of ours." A close relative. What does yours say in place of close relative?
One of our close relatives.
And that, if it says kinsman redeemer, that is not what is said in the original Hebrew. Naomi knows this guy is not number one in line. He's in the line of people who could be kinsman redeemers. There's a couple of translations that use that term, and that's not what she used. She uses a different word in the original Hebrew, or at least in the Hebrew as we have it. She uses a word for close relative, or among the people of our family.
It just says one of.
Yeah, and I think the one of is the better translation. Mine doesn't have one of. Mine just says a close relative. But doesn't say the closest relative, which is what that translation would say. Is that significant, given what's about to happen? How significant is that? Use the word hugely in your answer somewhere. Enormously significant. Does Naomi know that this guy is not number one in line. Number one in what line? Just in case there's a few of you who don't know, there's a custom in this time. It came out of God's law for providing for people who the way the system was supposed to work. You could sell the land, but every 50 years you had the Jubilee and the land came back to you. If you sold the land at any point before the Jubilee, you could reclaim the land. Did they sell their land when they went to Moab, this little family that now is reduced to just Naomi and Ruth? Did they sell their land? They walked away and abandoned it. Who has their land now? Answer, somebody, but we don't know. So they might conceivably get their land back. But the only way to get the land back is to have someone who is a kinsman redeemer to claim them in the name of the dead husband, the dead granddaddy, to have that reclaimed. That God had provisions for that. Basically, it was that somebody had to marry the woman and raise children to that. Okay? So Naomi says he is a close relative. He is one of our close relatives.
And it also says he's one of our redeemers.
He is, and I think the way to hear that is he is in the line of those who might serve as redeemers. But if he's in the line, what's the implication? He's not first in line. He's down the line somewhere. How far, we don't know. It turns out he is in the place of Avis. What do we know about Avis? You're number two. Hertz is number one. Avis. You remember all those ads? Don't you remember those ads? Okay. Brody's off the hook. There's no way he could remember this, right? Elizabeth might be off the hook, but the rest of you, right?
Brody wasn't even born.
When Avis was born. The ads are, by the way, the ads are getting interesting. If you have not seen the ad for Clear Shampoo, you need to watch for that. I watched it. I backed up. I watched it again. And Barbara says, women don't come with that shampoo. And I think she might be right. It's real disappointing.
He wasn't looking at the
shampoo. I wasn't looking at the shampoo. Avis advertises, you know, we're somebody else advertises we're just as good as a Xerox. You remember all that kind of stuff? This guy's number two. And number two is an interesting place to be. You only have to deal with one person. So, Naomi is acknowledging that she knows that. What does Naomi say? I'm skipping down to verse 20. Ruth the Moabitess said to her mother-in-law, he also said, stay with my work people until they have finished my whole harvest. How long is that going to take?
Wow.
A few days, maybe a couple of weeks, we don't know. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is better for you, daughter, to go with his workwomen than to go to some other field where you might be well ill-treated. So she stayed with Boaz's workwomen and gleaned until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she went on living with her mother-in-law. So far, okay? Okay. Now, I want to take just a moment because there's something fairly significant I want to do, and I want to try to clear the deck so we can do that. Okay? Can you summarize the rest of the book? They get married, they have a child, and the child is advertised, the son is advertised, is identified as the grandfather, I think, or maybe the grandfather, I think, of David, who would be king and would be the most prominent ancestor when Jesus comes. Okay? How did they come to get married? Ruth took some initiative, and they got married. I'm going to say that sentence that way, and if you have read the book, I want you to say whether or not that more or less summarizes it. Ruth took some initiative, and they got married. Okay. Now, the process of getting married, because Boaz was number two, what did he have to do? He had to go get rid of number one. Not quite. It wasn't a mob hit. Okay. What did he do? He confronted number one at the town gate in the presence of the town elders. He called the elders together to witness this. And he said to him, you have the right of redemption. Do you want to exercise it? And what does the guy say? You bet. You bet. Oh, that's what the guy says. The guy says, You bet. Absolutely, I want to. And then Boaz started pointing out a couple of things that would be his obligations, and the guy says, well, maybe not. And then they go through a ritual which involves throwing a shoe on the ground, a sandal I think they call it, relinquishing his rights, at which point Boaz claims those rights, and that sets things in stone. Okay? Now, are we okay?
And to the initiative part?
Yeah, yeah.
With Naomi's inclusion.
That's what we're going to talk about. I'm trying to save about 25 minutes to do that. Yeah. I want to save about 25. With Naomi's encouragement, Ruth took the initiative, and all these things then happen. Okay, and when the baby comes, the last glimpse you get is Naomi has this child on her knee. Okay, when David was born, who was around? Who was around was probably his grandmother, who was from Moab. And who would represent something really interesting in his perspective of things. And that's the sense that you get, is that a good part of who David is might have come from this interaction. It's not spoken, it's not spelled out, it's inferred. We're going to work a lot on what's inferred. Okay, so you ready? I want to now go slowly through chapter 3. And when we finish that, we will finish the book of Ruth. Because the rest of it, I think, lays out pretty well. Okay, so, pardon me while I go over 6 pages.
You going to need something to stand on?
No, this is just, let's get rolling. What is the first thing Naomi says? Chapter 3, verse 1. Her mother-in-law Naomi then said, daughter, is it not my duty, mine says. What does yours say?
Should I not try?
Yours just says, should I not?
Should I not seek?
Should I not seek? Should I try? Mine says, is it not my duty to see you happily settled? Is this the first time Naomi has expressed this thought? I'd like to jump to the point immediately. Is this the first time Naomi has expressed this thought?
No.
Absolutely not. When was the first time she expressed this thought? On the road leaving Moab. What did she say? Is it not better for you to go back? She said that to Orpah and to Ruth, her two daughters-in-law. Don't forget the story. Her husband was dead. Her two sons had married Moabite women, and then they had died. Here were 3 widows. She decides to go back because she hears that rain has come and the famine has ended. And she says to her two daughters-in-law, is it not better for you to find husbands in Moab? Is it not better for you to find happiness in Moab? Is it not better for you to go home? I think it was to your mother's house. And to worship Moab's gods. How was Naomi's analysis of where Ruth's happiness would lie? Your happiness lies in finding a husband and in going home and worshiping false gods, which she would have known or should have known to be. Is her analysis any better here? That's the question. I don't want you to answer that question yet. I want to move along a little bit. Is it not my duty to see you happily settled? And Boaz, the man whose work women you were with, is he not our close relative? Once again, it does not use the word for kinsman redeemer. It uses the word for close relative. Was Boaz number one on the list? No, he was not. What is Naomi about to do? What's Naomi about to do? She's about to jump the line. Tonight he will be winnowing the barley on the threshing floor. So, wash. Another translation says, take a bath. It occurred to me to ask how often would they have taken baths? You had to grow up during the Depression to have a better answer to that than I have. You took one every Saturday night, whether you needed one or not. right? Or you took one at the start of the winter and the end of the winter. I read this week that they said that they sewed children into their long johns as they started into the winter up in Wisconsin and Minnesota and places like that. Sewed them in to keep it from coming off. I suppose they had ways of, well, you can go ahead. So wash and perfume yourself. Perfume yourself. Have you been in the grocery, in the department stores at Christmas time? What's the first thing in the main doors from the mall? Okay. It's the perfume and the cosmetics counters, right? And they have women out there, usually women who sometimes in the off season advertise shampoo, and they're spraying perfume, right? Go back 40 years. What would the thing have looked like that they were spraying you with? It would have been a bottle, a little tube, a little nozzle, and a ball down here, a little rubber ball that you would press, okay? What was that called? Atomizer. That is the wrong name then, and I've tried my best to fix it. It does not take those things down to the level of atoms. The molecules, perfume is molecules. It is not an atomizer. It should be called, what does it produce? Mist. It should be called a mystifier. And if you will think it through, that's the right name for that thing. What's the purpose of perfume? Mystify. Bathe yourself, perfume yourself, put on your cloak. That's what mine says. I've looked at 6 translations. What does yours say? The nicest clothes you have. That, I think, is the best translation that we've got.
Mine also says, wash yourself and anoint yourself.
Anoint yourself. Okay.
And wash and put on your best clothes.
Put on your best clothes, I think, is the right way to do it. These people are living in poverty. They've been the best clothes she has may be hand-me-downs or maybe just something close to rags, but the best she has. And do what? Go to the threshing floor. What's at the threshing floor?
Yeah.
Boaz. Doing what? Celebrating the end of the harvest and the finishing of the work. What do you do when you celebrate the end of the harvest and the finishing of the work? You feast. That's a great word. That's the word I needed. Because when you say eat and drink, it doesn't carry the same power as feast. But there is eating and drinking. Barbara tells me when I go to a restaurant, I'm cheap. If I'm at home, I drink iced tea. I drink other things. I go to a restaurant, I drink water. I won't drink water at home, she says. I drink other things at home. But at the restaurant, I drink. Okay. Boaz wasn't drinking water. He was drinking celebratory beverage. Yes, ma'am.
So my question is, if they're in poverty, where in the world would you get perfume? Because that was for the luxurious.
That is a great question to which I do not know the answer. I don't even know where they'd find a bath water if they're living in poverty. I don't know where they'd find the best clothes they have. Some way, somehow, they have access to something. Okay? But here she goes to the threshing floor. What are the rest of the words that Naomi says? Please notice I said that carefully. What are the rest of the words Naomi said? I am choosing not to apply verbs yet. What are the words that she said? She says, do not let him recognize you while he is still eating and drinking. What does yours say? Don't let him know you are there. Don't let him recognize you. Don't let him see you, one translation says, while he is still eating and drinking. One translation says, until the party is well underway and he has had plenty of food and drink. Do you remember what they said to Jesus when Jesus had turned the water into wine and they took a sample of the wine to the master of the feast? You've saved the best life. Most people serve the good wine first. And then, when the guests are well, what's the word? It wasn't well liquored, but well lubricated was close. Then you bring out the inferior stuff, but you brought the best. You remember that term? Something like that is implied here. When Boaz is full of food and full of liquor, which is going to produce what physiological effect? He's going to be sleepy. Wait until he is satiated. Okay? There was one translation I think said that. And then she says, but take note of where he lies down. Is that what yours says? When he lies down, take note of where he lies. And then the implication is after he's gone to sleep, go and turn back the covering at his feet and lie down yourself. And what's the next sentence? He will tell you what to do. Ruth replies, I will do everything you tell me. Okay? What has Naomi just told her to do? That's the phrase one translation uses.
What was that?
Make herself available.
Uh-huh. If you read the message, does anybody have the message? Does anybody have the message? It's one of the 16 translations that Jean has on her pocket calculator.
Yeah,
what
verse is it?
It
goes to
the
top again.
5 or 4, 5. Make yourself available for marriage. And that's word.
Lie at his feet and let him know that you're available to him for marriage.
Yeah, and that phrase is in no other translation I've seen.
Then write his concerning marriage. He will tell you what to do concerning marriage.
Yeah, and I don't think that's in there. So now I'd like to ask you, what is Naomi's plan? To get her married. Cover your ears. This is tough. What's the purpose? To put two people together, one as beautiful as she can possibly be and as alluring as she can possibly be, and the other guy so muddled in his mind from all the food and drink that nature will take its course. I am critical of Naomi. Did you notice that? What has Naomi said by what she has told Ruth to do? What has Naomi said? I don't trust God to take care of us. I'm taking a shortcut to make sure it comes out right. The commentators do not agree on this. Two or three are brave enough to say it this way. The others will try to do everything they can to build something elaborate that comes to where the message is. That this is an innocent kind of just, I'm ready to be married. And the point that one commentator that I consulted said, wouldn't this have been better accomplished in public, in the daylight, in the middle of all the work women that she's been working with all week? Naomi says, something needs to happen, and I need to make it happen. I can't wait on God. And God might not get it right. And that is a tough, tough thing to say. Now, second question. Do you blame her? Given what she has had, given what she has experienced, can you blame her? The appearance seems to be God chooses not to blame her either. And that's the point I would like to make. But God's got somebody pretty special in Boaz. And God's got somebody pretty special in Ruth. And God seems to grant Naomi her wish, but not in the way Naomi expected it to happen. Verse 6, so she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had told her. There's one translation that I think is superior to all the others at this point. It said she did all according to what her mother-in-law had commanded her. This was seen as a series of commands that Naomi was giving her. And what that translation is suggesting is that Ruth met the letter of what Naomi had asked her to do, but did not carry out what Naomi had intended to be carried out. And there's a crucial distinction there. I think that translation is on to something. She did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. Interesting translation. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking, he went off happily. Mine says, does yours have that?
In good spirits.
Yeah, he felt very.
And he lay down beside the pile of barley. There's one translation that suggests that he went off someplace away from this. He took himself away from the main area. I don't know if your translation is the one that has that piece.
At the end of the barley.
Yeah. Ruth then quietly went, tell me, we'll walk along, turned back the covering at his feet and lay down. Any adjustments or any comment needed there?
The message says Ruth quietly follows. She lay down to signal her availability.
For marriage, yeah. And once again, I think the message is taking it further than the other translations do, which implies to me further than the Hebrew does. In the middle of the night, he woke up with a shock. Does yours have that word?
Startled,
yours says. And looked about him. And there lying at his feet was a woman. How much light would there have been to see by? We don't know. We don't know if it was a moonlit night, if it was a cloudless night. Unlikely there would be very much light. There might be a torch sitting here somewhere. Remember, he's essentially laying there guarding his wealth. This is the harvest. The whole of the harvest is here. If he's not there, somebody might come along and take some or all of it. So, you know, part of the deal is you have your celebration right there and you sleep around it that night, and then the next morning you start to haul it away and take it to the places you need to go. He wakes up with a start. There's somebody at his feet. How does he know it's a woman? I don't know, but that's a great question. Maybe the perfume. Good call, Kitty. I didn't have that. I've been wondering about that. Who are you? He says. Is that close to yours? And she replied, I am your servant Ruth. Spread the skirt of your cloak over your servant, for you have the right of redemption over me. That is not a good translation. There's a better one out there. What does yours say?
Since you are a kinsman.
No, before that. Spread your the corner of your garment. Not good. Not bad, but not good.
Spread your
wing of protection over me. That's the translation that I think catches it. What did I ask you to remember? Boaz says to her, may the Lord richly reward you for all you've done. And may you find the shelter you seek, the refuge you seek, under his wings. Ruth says to him, would you put your wing of protection over me? And I think that's the best translation here.
She also said, for you are next to kin.
Yeah. And she finally uses the word, and Boaz corrects her in a moment. Not first. For he says something very important first.
Man says, for you are a close relative.
Well, that one, she is using the word goel, the word for kinsman redeemer. And Boaz replies, may the Lord bless you, my daughter, for this second act of faithful love of yours is greater than the first. You have not run after young men, poor or rich. Do not be afraid, daughter, I will do everything you ask, since the people at the gate of my town know that you are a woman of
character.
Yours says noble character.
Excellence.
Mine says of great worth. There is one place in the Bible where that term is used of a woman more than any other place. There may be other places, but there's a huge, big one, and all of you should know it. Proverbs 31. Who can find a woman of noble character? Who can find a woman of great worth? And Proverbs 31 goes on to describe her. It is possible that when that proverb was written, they were thinking back to Ruth. It's not impossible. That phrase is powerful. What does he say in verse 12? But though it is true that I have a right of redemption over you, it is only second place. There is one who is closer. Now, moving along, he takes steps to protect her physically by not immediately sending her home. It would be dangerous for her to go home in the middle of the night. He also takes pains to protect her dignity and her integrity. Stay here, and at first light, go home. He sends her home with gifts. He gives her 6 measures, I think it says in my translation, of barley to take home with her. There was great danger in the middle of the night. Temptation that would have been huge. And somehow these two good people have negotiated their way around it. I do not believe Naomi herself thought that they would. I think she was assuming that she would get her way without that. And it is, I think, a point at which she can be criticized. Please don't hear that criticism as dismissive. I believe God himself looked and said, I can understand why she did that. And I think what happened subsequently is a signal of God's forgiveness for that action. But it did not happen the way she planned, I believe. And I don't think very many people who read Ruth catch that. I think you need to, because the temptation to take a shortcut is in front of all of us. I can see what needs to happen, and the end justifies the means. I can see what needs to happen, and God might not get it done. This is not the same as don't worry. This is something different. Where do you go with doing what you can do and trusting God for the rest and trusting God all the way through? Where's the line? I have to admit, I don't know. Because each situation, I think, presents itself in a way that's unique. But there is a principle here. And one of those principles that I think is bedrock is doing godly things in ungodly ways is never right. And I think hiding in this little book is that lesson. Chapter 4, he goes into public, he calls the elders, he calls the guy who has priority. They go through the process. The guy at first says, oh yeah, I'll take that, because he gets the land. And then he says, well, you got all these other obligations. Well, maybe that's not such a good idea. It's not clear exactly what turned him away, but it is clear that Boaz is pushing things on him to try to dissuade him, and it's successful. And Boaz claims this. And they end up, verse 11, he's made the claim. All the people at the gate said, we are witnesses. And the elders said, may the Lord make the woman about to enter your family like who?
Rachel.
What happened with Rachel and Leah? I think that was Jacob, right?
Yes.
On the night that he was supposed to marry Rachel, he woke up the next morning in bed with Leah. Huh. That sounds like a mess. He got Rachel with 7 more years of work, right? He goes on to say, grow mighty in Ephrathah, be renowned in Bethlehem, and through the children the Lord will give you by this young woman, may your family be like the family of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. Whoa, that's another one. What happened with Tamar and Judah way back there in Genesis 38? You do remember, right? Judah had a son who died, leaving Tamar a widow. He gave another son to her to fulfill this same law that we're talking about here. And that son died. And he had another son. He decided he wouldn't give him that son because he didn't want to lose all his sons. So he was, interestingly, threshing wheat. No, he was shearing sheep. And they had a celebration at the end of the sheep shearing. And he decided it might be fun to have a little dalliance. So he found a woman who looked like a prostitute, went to bed with her, and the next day goes and tries to reclaim a piece of his possessions that he had left with her. There'd never been a prostitute at that spot. Who was this person? His daughter-in-law shows up pregnant, and they're about to stone her. And she says, ask the man whose staff this is or whose cloak this is. And he says to her, you have done honorably and I have done badly because I did not follow the law and you found a way to make it happen. It wasn't as pretty as this. It was quite ugly. But it's very interesting. The two cases that the people at the gate choose to bless the family like this and like this are both cases that had a lot of shakiness in how this came to be. Of those three cases, Ruth and Boaz have lifted themselves above that. And it is remarkable that they were able to do that. Now, verse 13, Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And when they came together, comma, what does it say?
The Lord
enabled her to conceive. How long has she been married over in Moab? Maybe 8 or 9 years and no children? You wonder whether God would have blessed the union if the union had been illicit. If Naomi's plan had come about, would there have been a child? We don't know. Ruth and Boaz come out like champions at a level that is just remarkable. Just remarkable. And God blesses that. And it specifically, it doesn't say she came to be with child. It said the Lord enabled her to conceive and she bore a son. That's all I know to tell you about this particular book. Is it enough to get you thinking a bit? Is it enough for you to see some pieces here? Yes, Allison.
I think it's really interesting, and I don't mean to put a damper on concluding the book, but you know, what went on there has happening in this world today.
Oh, Lord, yes.
And we have a lot of women, if you see the documentary Half the Sky, there are many women who are putting their daughters in this position, in the sex trade, and it doesn't have this kind of outcome.
It does not.
It's kind of hard to read this without thinking of that.
It is my belief that even in the middle of that, there will be one or two that somehow find a way to rise above it. It is rare. It is rare. But the world is an ugly, ugly place. And sometimes people do things out of panic, out of desperation, that are not good. They're not good for yourself. They're not good for your daughters. They're not good for anything. And the men who go along with that, it's awful. But it's a part of the world that they lived in, and it's a part of the world we live in. And I think it's fair to raise that issue. There are some in our church who are leading us to address this or that part of the sex trade problems that are in our city. Anybody else?
Bill?
Yeah.
When you were talking about Naomi trying to advance this relationship, the word that came to mind was manipulate a situation to get what you want. And it's really hard to personally, to keep hands off and let God deal with it, instead of trying to manipulate things so that you get what you want or think you want or whatever.
The more desperate the situation is, the more you get to the point of saying, I'll try anything. And I think if you see Naomi as manipulative and stop there, I think you're misreading the situation. I think what you should see is Naomi is desperate. I think she may know something about the person who's first in line and know how much better it would be for Boaz to be the one. I think she sees such good that could come from having that accomplished and sees no way that it will happen. And that moment of disconnect, I'm so desperate, what will I do? I'll do this. It looks like manipulation. I think it is harsh and probably incorrect to call it that. But it sure comes out with those features to it. But I think she was desperate beyond desperate. And again, it is my belief on the basis of what I read that God blessed the goal that she wanted don't think he blessed the means that she was trying to find, but I think he forgave her for the means that she tried. But that doesn't mean that desperate people in other days, or unfortunately evil people in other days, will not find ways of putting people into some situations that are like this and worse. And pretending that they don't exist is probably not a smart move on our part. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time you've given us. We thank you for guiding us into the harder parts of this story. We pray that you would bless our church, bless our leaders, and bless us as members here as we try to work out and live before you the life that you're calling us to live. We thank you for the chance to study your word, and we pray that you would bring us back next week able to do this again. We ask in Jesus' name.